If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high-quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. From John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know. Let them know.
Yes, it is John Pollock and Waitay. And this week, from Raw to Dynamite, I am 0-2 on my graphic selections.
Okay, so on Monday, what did you choose?
I went with the War Raiders and New Day. Mm-hmm. My goal is to pick what is going to be the most significant thing on this show. And
for Dynamite, you chose Pack
Swerve and Pack.
Well, just, I mean, in some ways, I think that ended up being the most
something noteworthy came out of that match.
Yeah.
Was not supposed to, but did. So yes, we will be getting into all of that. I do want to alert people that today on Pollock and Thurston, we had two guests on the show, Brandon Ross of Lightshed, returning media analyst, talking all about the economic factors that could impact the UFC, WWE this year. It was actually comical that within minutes of our show ending, Donald Trump put a 90-day pause on these tariffs. But regardless, the economy is a mess, and a pause is not going to change that. So a lot of great insight, especially into the UFC rights being up this year and WWE, the 3 months into the move to Netflix. And Brandon Ross will also be in attendance at WrestleMania next week as well. Plus, if that's not all, Richard Deitch from The Athletic also with us on the show as we talked about more of the WWE Netflix relationship that we have seen this many months in, and sort of the company's business momentum heading into WrestleMania as well. So I thought they were two really great conversations that we had on today's show, if you want to look that up. And coming up in the next few days, we are going to have Post Pro Res with WH Park and Karen Peterson. And on Saturday, a review of Windy City Riot that will be free for everybody here on the YouTube channel and in your podcast feed. They will be going through the show in Chicago. And then we are going into the weekend with Collision Course and the NWA podcast on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. And then Monday, it's WrestleMania week.
Oh my God, it's next week. That's right.
Did you know?
Oh, I was actually taking next week off, I thought. Yes, WrestleMania week begins on Monday. So we're going to have lots of programming coming up on the site. Great time to jump on board at postwrestlingcafe.com, where we are going to have daily shows next week. We will be doing a show every day at noon, beginning on Thursday. John Cena will be joining me next Thursday. And we've also got some bonus shows expected to be making their way on the cafe next week. So you'll want to be keeping your feed refreshed on the cafe. And of course, we will be going live Saturday and Sunday night after both nights of WrestleMania. So honored that Waitay will break his own break by spending some time watching WrestleMania and then chatting about it with me on Sunday night.
I gotta be here for night two. Of course,
the big night. Way refused to do two nights of WrestleMania, so we got him for one big night, and that will be next weekend. But lots to look forward to from the whole staff at Post Wrestling. Tonight we are going to Baltimore, the Chesapeake Employers Insurance Arena, 3,018, according to WrestleTix, and we start off with the Death Riders reacting. And John Moxley calls this the best roster of pure talent. So why can't any of you get your act together when it counts? He's actually like just mocking these people that they can't beat him. They don't want it. They scorch the earth with anyone that tries to consider themselves a contender and then acknowledges the Young Bucks. They're back, but I am surrounded by warriors and we don't recognize them anymore. You don't understand the game anymore, and you better be careful before you make any moves. So we have this showdown between the Death Riders and the Young Bucks with more to come there. And starting things off, it is a non-title bout between Jon Moxley and Katsuyori Shibata on the anniversary of Shibata's nearly career-ending injury with Kazuchika Okada at Sakura Genesis. And they start off, they are grappling, and then it's Shibata with a big wind-up slap. They're trading chops, boots, and then a baseball slide dropkick sends Moxley out. But the second gets caught with a clothesline. Moxley hits a pile driver, and Shibata just gets up to his feet, lands the PK before going down, clutching his head. And then Moxley locks in a choke after gouging the eyes, which would be a common occurrence of the Death Riders throughout this show. And the eye gouge leading to the choke, and Paul Turner waves it off at 5 minutes and 38 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I think in another time this, you know, maybe to some people, even today, would very well be a dream match. But given their difference in rank and perhaps maybe what are still some unknown limitations of what Shibata may or may not be allowed to do, this was really only presented as a strong showcase for Jon Moxley. But I feel like I saw enough here to know how beautifully their styles were able to match up. Both have a lot of shoot influence, obviously. Very hard-hitting striking and very convincing-looking grappling and submissions. So it definitely had my interest, but it almost felt like a bit of a tease of what I probably would have envisioned these two may have been able to provide in another time.
Yeah, in another non-WWE relationship, this could have been Bloodsport next weekend.
It could have, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So the Young Bucks come out. At least I could confirm this was Nick. There was also this extremely tanned individual next to him claiming to be Matt.
Well, Matt has, he started a YouTube channel with his wife, a travel YouTube channel, and clearly they've been going to some rather hot destinations because, yeah, he looks fresh off of the beach.
They just travel to different places?
Yeah, yeah. A travel vlog type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a tough channel to maintain when you've got kids and you're a traveling wrestler. I don't know how many beaches he's going
to
be seeing.
These days, I don't know how much traveling they're doing to the wrestling.
Yeah, that's true. But they are back now. Well, I have not seen any of these videos, but man's got a tan for sure. So they come out. Nick tells the audience to give it up for Moxley and to show some respect for the founding fathers of AEW. I could have sworn I was told that one man single-handedly launched this company. So I don't know what these two are claiming to have ownership of.
I guess depends on who you ask.
They explain why they did what they did at Dynasty. They did it for Hangman because he never wanted Swerve to be champion. And we don't forget who our friends are. We still love you, Hangman. And Matt calls for a peace offering to the Death Riders. They have no problems with them and realized while they were at home, we have more in common with them than we thought. We too want the locker room to rise up and we want to change the world. Moxley did what we couldn't. He took over AEW and won the heavyweight title. We didn't do that. Sunday was our pitch to them to join together. Think of what we could do together and wants to discuss business. But a man who also wants to talk business is Kenny Omega, who wants to talk about animals business as well. He comes out and references the attack from last year. It's like, okay, we're just going to get everything out on the table to try and... This was basically every loose end as we're moving forward with this story. You attacked me at the height of my diverticulitis, but I had already forgiven you. It's like, I wish we had known that. That's how... a wrestling feud typically works. You forgive in private. I came back to AEW not for revenge, but for my legacy. And allow me to tell a brief story. And Kenny Omega goes to explain that he once had a friend in high school who had two Shih Tzu dogs. And these two Shih Tzus often shit on the floor. And this led to a chant of Dookie I'm not exaggerating anywhere here. I didn't know where in God's name this was going. But after this very long story, he explained that after all of this dookie piled up, he finally had to tell his friend, maybe we should go to my house instead. And that's you, the Young Bucks.
Yeah, they're the Shih Tzus.
Yes.
Shitting in a home. Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of shit to clean up over this last year. And then, do you have anything to add about the dookie?
No, not really. It was a bit of a strange promo. It got people to laugh. I don't know if that was Kenny's like prime intent here. Like, did he want to come out here to do a stand-up routine, or was he actually trying to make us laugh and also trying to make a point? I mean, no, it's not going to win promo of the year, but
no.
I mean, it was, I thought it was fine. Like, okay. I didn't hate it.
Well, then he brings up the shredding of the documents. It's like, oh yes, of course, the shredding of the documents. Yeah. We all know what you were doing. I was like, no, none of us know what he was doing. That was completely left open-ended. Please tell us. Those were all the receipts for everything you had spent money on. You almost killed the company I gave my life and soul to. And after, he suggests, why not we just fight? So as he makes his way to the ring, out comes Okada. Out comes Swerve, and Swerve comes through the crowd, and he's got a chair as Okada and the Bucks take off. So apparently they are back aligned together, and Omega gives a fist bump to Swerve before he leaves. And before we get to Swerve's promo, I just thought this was, they wanted to basically end all of this past stuff that we were maybe at one point going to pay off that we really have no desire to at this point. It was just, let's just start with a clean slate. But my God, could we have not been any less creative in how we did this? It just felt like, yeah, we set up all this stuff. We're not going any further. I did not enjoy this. I guess it's over, and that's
well.
It.
By we had set it up. What are you exactly referring to? The Kenny Bucks feud, or the documents, and what else? What are you talking about?
I mean, in this whole thing, he said both that he forgave the Bucks, but then he wants to fight the Bucks. So I didn't even know what the message was at the end of all of this.
I guess he forgave them for the diverticulitis attack, but does not forgive them for their ongoing sort of decision to get involved possibly now with the Death Riders. So that wasn't really extinguished. The feud is still on. We could still say that Kenny's still in some form seeking revenge for the Bucks through their attack. The whole like tearing of the documents thing, I'm now at this point seeing this result. I'm pretty convinced that that was only meant to be a psych gag, and I don't think it was ever supposed to be something we were supposed to look into. I thought it was
important. So why even bring it up here?
Well, because you know there are people that are going to ask, like, what happened to the documents? Like, you know, there are people that, like you and I who would probably ask those things, frankly. Well, I think it was a bad psych gag to just do, period, because you know wrestling fans are going to ask questions. I'm not saying any of that was good. I'm just saying I don't think this is extinguished. Clearly, they're leading to something involving Kenny and Swerve, it looks like, maybe taking on this version of the Elite with Kazuchika Okada. I enjoyed the star power in this. Like, for the first time, I think in quite a while, like, it feels like we're getting Kenny and the Bucks fully healthy and fully active. Now we're mixing in a Kazuchika Okada and a Swerve, so it feels like AEW has like a lot of big players that can interact with each other right now. I appreciated that. I hate the Bucks as these characters. When they came back, what added to, I think, my displeasure with the finish of Dynasty was not just the fact that it was a screwy finish, it was the fact that we were getting this version of the Bucks again, which, man, if there's something I dislike more than the Death Riders, and I think the audience dislikes more than the Death Riders, it's the EVP Young Bucks.
The Succession Bucks.
Oh, man. And like, just getting the characters again on TV is, to me, like, more of a turnoff than something that would get me to turn on the TV. And just knowing that we're going to have, we're going to have to withstand this a little bit longer as we get to a potential Hangman and Swerve program with the two of them. I dislike that. I dislike the sort of like tone of their heel promos. They're never at all menacing. They do humor well. It's why I love BT so much. But when they're kind of doing it in this sort of like cartoonish villain type of way, I don't think it meshes well with like the likes of Swerve or Paige at all, who are like two of the more serious, you know, characters that you've got. And you know, Kenny's promo wasn't a great serious promo either, but because he's Kenny, like I that's not my main draw, you know, when I'm watching him. So I didn't bother me as much.
Yeah, I just felt in the midst of like I'm listening to this Dookie promo. It's like the idea is like we're dangling like Omega with Hangman in this whole thing with the Bucks. I was like, this was one of the greatest matches in AEW history, and they are literally talking me out of interest in this whole thing. With this, so mm-hmm. by the end of it, I don't disagree that I feel like, yeah, they are not ending this with Kenny and the Bucks and with Swerve and obviously Hangman attached to all of this by extension as well. Like you are creating this whole dynamic, but it's, and the Death Riders as well, like this Death Riders mm-hmm. angle is just growing and growing now, and it's like this multi-pronged attack now.
Yeah, let's remember we're coming up to Anarchy in the Arena and Blood and Guts season, so what combination of all of these guys will make for some of those interactions?
Yeah, this very well could be that at Double or Nothing.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. By now, a lot of our listeners already know about the benefits of a VPN for their wrestling consumption, helping them access cheaper prices for pay-per-views or ad-free programming through international versions of popular streaming services. But the most important benefit of a VPN continues to be its ability to help you shield your browsing. Using a trusted VPN like NordVPN adds an extra layer of protection from prying eyes, preventing your sensitive data from being sold or shared with third parties that may put you at risk of unwanted solicitations or even fraud. You know the link by now, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months through our exclusive offer. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. As always, you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with Nord.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is 2 editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. So Swerve is left and declares it buck hunting season, and he's here with a loaded shotgun. Maybe that'll be the finish at Anarchy at the Arena.
A buckshot.
Have we had guns? We haven't had guns in AEW yet.
We've had like Arn Anderson, his threat of guns.
Threat, but not a physical firearm yet.
I guess not. We've yet to know whether or not Warner, TBS, TNT have that line.
I'm sure Darby would volunteer
to take a gunshot.
You never know. Okay, depends. Sure. Maybe if, at least with mm-hmm. blanks. So then he gets jumped by Pac, and we come back from break, and they go right into their match. And this is when I realized, damn, wrong graphic. And Swerve sends him into the steps, and then he catches Pac and then kind of has him in a position like for a Styles clash, but elevates Pac and launches him for this buckle bomb. And the way Pac, the angle, you couldn't see the way that his foot came down, but this was clearly the spot that he's favoring his heel as soon as he goes down, and he's yelling out, and it was not your selling type of yell either. Mm-hmm. And he just rolls to the floor and he cannot get up. Doc Sampson is over there. Swerve is just staying like in character and just biding his time. He was a total pro here and couldn't really just, hopefully he would be able to roll back in. He did, and instantly is hit with the super kick and Swerve stomp, and Swerve pins him in 4:16. Pac is just laying there. They cut away, and when we come back, he's just gotten out of there. So, I mean, this did not look good. There was no update throughout the night, and he did not come back for the closing angle, which was to set up a trios title match. So, I mean, man, this guy has been snake bit by a number of like injuries, visa issues, and hopefully this is not serious. But I mean, they obviously had to cut this short.
And like we spoke about with the Kevin Owens story, it's not a really super risky, dangerous move that causes a potential injury. Like in this case, it was just what seemed to be an awkward landing on his foot from a buckle bomb. Again, we've yet to receive the full details of
the
what
buckle
exactly
bomb
happened.
We've seen like between like Sting and Balor who have like taken it, but like this was like a landing on like the foot. Like this wasn't neck, this wasn't like shoulder or anything. Like,
yeah,
because one of the criticisms for the buckle bomb is that the person taking it, you don't know when you're bracing for the impact, but in this one, it just looks like it was just like a total fluke that his foot got tangled or twisted coming down, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things about professional wrestling that I don't know if like you could really prepare for so much, and knowing what a wrestler feels, I imagined he maybe wanted to tough out some of this match before realizing he really couldn't. I will say, like, I wonder if AEW, like, ultimately, there's not much you could prepare for something like this, but I do wonder if they could do better with their production, with some protocol in the event that something like this happens. You know, like, there was a little bit of awkwardness, like, between Pac and like the referee, I guess, almost checking on him, deciding whether or not he'd be able to go before they do the check. And the very uncomfortable moment where it almost feels like he's wooling himself in there back in the ring just to finish the story. When I really do wonder if like at some point, if you have any of these sort of awkward moments, we just decide to go to commercial. You know what I mean? Like cut to a video package, cut to break. And then maybe when we come back, like in a real sport, you get the official referee's decision, you know? So I just wonder if like an actual protocol for these sort of situations should be worked on and prepared for that much more for the future.
I mean, in a case like this as well, like the way it happened, like, first of all, it's sometimes you're in this situation, the guy who's supposed to win is the one hurt, and that you kind of just have to think of something on the fly. In this one, like you could have just said, like it's a TKO finish, and look what Swerve was out for revenge, and he took out Pac. Like that could have just been your finish right there. It's like we just saw what happened, and Swerve finished him. He's the winner by TKO, and you don't have to have this guy on one leg having to literally hop his way into the ring to take another like a bump off a super kick and the finish. But
yeah,
again,
that, like, sort of finish, honestly, it does nothing for anybody. Like it makes Swerve kind of look like a bully to just beat up a guy whose foot is already injured. It kind of like kills the immersion of professional wrestling when you know a guy is hurt and really can't wrestle and is just there to pretend that he could finish the match. So I'd much rather a TKO finish or just the referee calling it. You know, that to me feels a lot more realistic.
Ricochet is with Beast Mortos and crew, and tonight we have a 8-man tag with $400,000 going to the winner, to the winning team. And Ricochet declares himself the captain, and the others take issue with this designation. And then we go to a tunnel with Will Ospreay, Mark Briscoe, Speedball, and Kevin Knight, and they all go through what they're going to do with their $100,000. This was the best promo of the night. Mark Briscoe is going to diversify his portfolio, and Speedball Mike Bailey was going to buy shoes.
And Kevin
$100,000 shoes. That might have been those CM Punk sneakers we saw the other night.
Shoes. Well, he's due, I suppose, for a pair or two. Yeah, might be. Yeah, he could buy the CM Punk sneakers. Kevin Knight's going to Magic City, so I'm sure he'll have a great Monday night this coming Monday.
Okay, well, that was great. They showed a video for the Women's Owen Hart Cup and the updates. We're going to get more matches coming up on Collision that we'll go through. And they're also going to be doing Mercedes' second round match next week in Boston, which does make sense. But they're going to have they've got a long time until Double or Nothing, and they're just like plowing through these tournaments. Like we're gonna have Mercedes potentially in the finals after next week, and we've got a month and a half till Double or Nothing.
Yeah, interesting.
Long
interesting
build. Yeah,
well, I mean, beyond that, it's going to be a really long build to All In, so how are they going to fill that gap?
Well, that's face-to-faces,
yeah,
promo segments,
sure,
and then lines that you're not cleared to be using on people. Renee is with Hangman Page. He doesn't know how to prepare for a wild card, but he's busy. He goes into Swerve's dressing room. Nana's there, and he says to Nana, "Let me make it clear, I wasn't trying to help Swerve." And Nana tells him, and he also warns him, make sure Swerve does not screw me in the Owen. And Nana says, "For the last year, I've wanted to tell you something, and I regret," and Page won't even let him get it out. He's not going to let him clear his conscience.
Yeah, I love
some
that.
Psychological shit from Hangman. Yeah. I really liked it.
All of this continues to be very interesting. I think it's great follow-up to the great scene that Paige and Swerve had last week. And I think the Paige character continues to be maybe the most interesting, like, serious character that AEW has. He, you know, despite it being a babyface, clearly has some faults within him that he can't really shake. He, like you mentioned, John, it's like he doesn't want to give Nana the benefit of apologizing. And I think it continues to show, like, how driven Page is by the anger that's within him and how much he actually needs this anger that he has at Swerve to motivate him. So there's just something about him where he just can't let this feud end. And I really love the way that they've been telling the story so far. And I look forward to seeing how it continues to play out.
I really feel he's the most complex and fascinating character on this program, consistently. The 8-man 400K match is next. This was like one of the on like the final night of Bola, where they were a bunch of the participants who are eliminated, they just threw them into like your 8-man or 10-man tag. That's what this kind of match was. All these super combinations. Ospreay wants in with Leo Rush early, and pretty much every combo was just everyone going through their 30 seconds together, and the crowd loved this. Ricochet gets laid out by all four of the baby faces, and they all end up doing dives, including ending with a golden triangle by Bailey. And Ricochet is left in the ring. He does a somersault dive where he was just going to land on all four. They all step to the side, so he lands on his feet, and then all four of them just smack him on top of the head, and we go to break. During the break, this is where everyone caught their breath. They just beat down on Kevin Knight, and after Bailey misses the moonsault double knees, we see Knight reverse a powerbomb into a DDT onto Beast Mortos. Bailey then gets hit with a DVD by Ricochet. And then it's Bailey and Briscoe who both go for the crane kick. And Mortos eats an Os Cutter. Knight gets the UFO splash, but the save is made. And Ospreay is left alone with Mortos, where he wins with the Hidden Blade. 12 minutes. I thought the highlight match of the whole show.
I agree. I love this. Otherwise, this would be a pretty like random like 8-person match, like maybe something that you would see on the undercard of a New Japan show. Just group a bunch of the baby faces together against a bunch of the heels. But the inclusion of a $400,000 winning prize attached to it.
Just so random.
It's all the justification I need as somebody who appreciates storytelling.
Sure.
To tell me why these guys are bonded together to wrestle this match. Like I that's all I need to enjoy the wrestling that's in ring. And I thought they had a great 8-man tag. What a great combination of like wrestlers that many of them new this year to AEW, like in Kevin Knight, Speedball, Ospreay. You know, all three of them have just injected so much sort of like new energy, in particular with this sort of style of match. So I think Crew actually looked really great here as well. Yeah. So those guys are, I think, doing really well. Beast Mortos continues to shine in like a really odd way, in that he seems to fit anywhere, like as the sort of like piece of the like whatever faction that you want to throw him into. And Ricochet like really has felt. He actually does feel like a leader of a faction at this point.
Everyone got like their shine in this match, and continually, I think, like Speedball and Kevin Knight, it just feels like they have really integrated them so mm-hmm. well in a very short amount of time. I hope they should seriously do some vignettes with some of the winners. Like, I want to see Kevin Knight at Magic World. I want to see Bailey go sneaker shopping, and I want like an Intuit Tax Turbo segment with Mark Briscoe investing yes. his $100,000.
Doing
his taxes.
Yeah, I want stock tips from Mark Briscoe, because, you know, I'm sure many of us would need it right now. So, yes. How is he navigating the current potential recession?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how Delaware is coping. The chicken farmers, they're farmers are going to be feeling this one.
He saves a ton on groceries already by growing his own chicken.
That is true. The price of eggs not affecting Mark Briscoe potentially. There's a recap of FTR's attack on Cope. None of the three were on the show. Hurt Syndicate come out and they go to toast their title defense when MJF is out and he just stands alongside of the Hurt Syndicate, assuming that his assisting them on Sunday has led to his inclusion. Well, MJF, who... may or may not have listened to my complaints last week, said, you know, Tony Khan wanted me in the Owen Hart Cup, but I'm not going to sweat my balls off entering that tournament when I can join the Hurt Syndicate, cut the line, and get my title back. Yeah.
It's the same excuse he gave the last time there was a title opportunity that he happened to not. I think it was it a gauntlet or something? It was something like that. Anyway, so
was MJF, I can't remember the term.
He was missing, and then like a bunch of internet nerds were asking, "Well, what?" Like he anticipates, because I think he himself is an internet nerd, you know. So he anticipates people saying, "Well, where was MJF in all of this?" And obviously he has a very valid excuse for not entering these things. Yeah.
He doesn't want to sweat his balls off. Noted. Mm-hmm. He says that he takes credit for them retaining at Dynasty before Lashley tells him to shut up. You didn't get the job done and we don't need you. And they get into an argument. MVP takes it to a vote where it has to be a unanimous vote. And MVP puts his thumbs up. Benjamin does a thumbs in the middle. I thought he was going to abstain, but then he puts the thumbs down. Lashley is so happy. This was the most joy I've ever heard come out of Bobby Lashley. He really emoted this, and he leaves with Shelton, and MJF is left frustrated that he has not been indoctrinated into the Hurt Syndicate. Mm-hmm. Not this week.
No, not this week. But you know, the way that they're pacing this, I wonder if like All In could be the ultimate destination for whatever this story is supposed to be. I'm really liking the pace of it so far. I think they've kind of set up for you, you know, the at least immediate chapters with each person eventually giving him the thumbs up, and Shelton, despite the thumbs down this week, is later kind of lets on that maybe he could be turned via comedy. You know,
it could be a thing where if you are leading to this, like I think obviously everyone's watching this with the idea MJF gets in and then there's eventually going to be the turn. But I think the key is you want to establish it. So when you do the turn, it's effective, and having that thumbs up as their little go-to thing.
Great.
I mean, I know it's like a total rip of like Evolution and such, but when you finally do the thumbs
Evolution down, were not the first people to do a thumbs up. Thumbs
but for
down,
a wrestling but angle,
yes, you're right.
For a heel turn, it's very synonymous. But there you have it.
MJF, I mean, the dynamic here feels, okay, if we're going to use another wrestling comparison, Sami Zayn and the Bloodline, you know, like a guy right. who clearly does not look like the others joining in and trying to fit in and haha, right? MJF,
Could you imagine Big Larry joining the Hurt Syndicate?
Who's Big Larry? Oh,
Sami Zayn's alter ego. Was that his name?
Big Larry?
Haven't you seen this was his character on the indies when he thought he was black.
I'm not aware of this. Wow.
Oh, you have to have seen this.
Really? Wow. Okay,
never mind. I'll send you some promos.
I got some work to do in my weeks off, clearly. But like MJF is, even in this short glimpse, he's becoming so entertaining that I think he's like, the crowd were chanting he's our scumbag again. So he's become a big baby face again, almost as a result of just this little interaction that we've seen. And I think that'll continue to ramp things up. So we compare maybe like the post Cole MJF careers of both MJF and Adam Cole. Adam Cole, I think, still has some work to do to kind of move on from that. But MJF, I think, has clearly been able to move on like pretty well. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Next segment, we go to Renee, who is with Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. And Ford pretty much does the whole promo here. Like, she does now really feel like she is the mouthpiece for Megan Bain, beyond just being sort of in her corner. And states, Storm barely survived, and it's just going to get worse for her. The division cannot move on, and she is going to be at Collision on Saturday. And Bain says that she will make you bow down. So it did sound like they are going to try to extend another match out of these two before the Owen Hart Cup concludes.
Interesting. Okay. Because if it is, I just wonder how you book it. You know, do you have actually, like, would you have Bane win this one? You know, and that would totally throw a wrench into the Owen outcome, I suppose. But I could actually see that, you know. Let's say, like, okay, especially after tonight, we're kind of jumping ahead, but let's say Jamie Hayter wins the tournament.
Who I could very well see winning this whole thing.
Couldn't. It like seems to make a bit more natural sense to have Hayter go after a Megan Bain as champion rather than, you know, some like Tony Storm, right?
Yeah, I just...
Statlander.
I think for the big show, I think they do want to have Tony Storm in that.
You'll
that
still have to, a match. Tony Storm match. You just happen to have... It's kind of like Gunther and Jay, right? You know, it doesn't have to be the match, but it's a title match nonetheless.
Titleless Tony Storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Chris Statlander and Thunder Rosa were next in the opening round of the tournament with Toni Storm on commentary, talking about her big package that she used to defeat Megan Bain on Sunday. Thunder Rosa, it's a sliding drop kick. They go to the floor. Taz started singing the Bee Gees during the commercial break. No one joined in with him.
More than a woman, yeah.
Yes. And then Toni Storm looks into the camera and gave a PSA, do try this at home. And boy, did Excalibur just quickly correct and say, no, don't. Blue Thunder Bomb is hit by Chris Statlander. Then Thunder Rosa hits a Destroyer, Shining Wizard. She can't keep Chris Statlander down as she gets frustrated. And then out of nowhere, it's a clothesline Wednesday Night Fever by Statlander, who pins Thunder Rosa in 9:38 as Storm applauds. And then Chris helps Thunder Rosa up. Thunder Rosa is frustrated as she leaves the ring, and Chris Statlander will face either Jamie Hayter or Billy Starks. So she will face Jamie Hayter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely got this wrong. I thought, like, Thunder Rosa, just given Thunder Tits and Texas, like, I thought she'd actually be one of the picks to win this tournament. But out in the first round, again, like, with the scenario that we're kind of playing out, if we do get that Megan Bain rematch, it doesn't necessarily rule out Thunder Tits not exploding at All In. You know, still a possible destination, but maybe a bit less likely now.
Don Callis is with Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita and predicts that the two of them are going to meet in the finals of the Owen Hart Cup after Fletcher's win and Takeshita set to take on Brody King. He calls them jacked, oiled up, hot, and what I hope are their new team name, very healthy young men. He says that due to all of these injuries, the Callis family is now accepting new members. So we know that Brian Cage had been hurt, and it sounds like Lance Archer is also hurt based on this.
He's hurt?
I don't know. This, he was they weren't here. Look at that. What a frame.
Well, could it just be like what? Like one tag team partner's out?
The other's out?
The other one's out? Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, he encourages people to send their 8x10s and their bank account numbers. So they're adding members to the Don Callis family.
Yeah, maybe just on this topic of conversation, we should add that they have been teasing these Don Callis lookalikes in the crowd. They did it on Sunday. They did one again today. So it seems to be some sort of setup of potentially introducing a new member like that somehow. Like
twins?
a bunch of Callis. Okay. Callis twins?
The Callis twins. I don't know.
Yeah, you're just now making me think of Ron and Don Harris coming out dressed up as Don Callis.
Well, I hope they're not coming in.
Yeah, I hope not either.
Adam Cole is with the Undisputed Kingdom after winning the TNT title. They are the elite of the elite. Roderick says, now it's time for me and Kyle to have our moment. Cole calls the last 2 years the most challenging of his life, but this is just the start for them. It's a new era in AEW, and we are the Paragon.
This almost seemed to indicate that they've got a new name.
Maybe there's a dispute over their name and they're going to rebrand themselves. Paragon.
So they can no longer use Undisputed or Kingdom? Because the Kingdom is the part of the equation.
Well, they still called themselves the Undisputed Kingdom in this promo, but they were clearly emphasizing this Paragon at the...
They're both. They're the Undisputed Paragon Kingdom.
Well, all I know is that if I were to ask ChatGPT, give me the most bland name for a wrestling group, the Paragon would be top five.
Paragon, Pinnacle, the Calling. You like that one?
Yeah.
Dark State.
Dark State. One word, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Next is TV time with Chris Jericho. He talks about losing the match, losing his tooth, and losing the title. That's a rough pay-per-view. But he congratulates Bandido, who only won due to his intrusive family members and stooge of a mother. But I too have a family, and he calls out Big Bill and Brian Keith. He tells the two he was hoping they would win the tag titles, but you didn't. And Bill cuts off Jericho, stating, I know you've been angry, and I've been getting angry. I've been getting angry a lot lately. I respected you, Chris. That's why I joined this group, but I did not sign up to be a punching bag. And I will leave if you're just going to berate us for not winning the tag belts. And Brian Keith feels the exact same way. Jericho looks at Keith, asks about both of them, and says, I handpicked you two, your future world champions, both of you, and says, I needed you, Bill, on Sunday. You weren't there. Some might say it's your fault that I lost, but I'm not saying that. And I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. And he takes this bat and he smashes the TV in the ring, and he just repeats, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed, ending with, I'm fucking disappointed in you, and until you change that, I think it's best that I leave. And this crowd, they all sang goodbye. They were wishing him well, and then Jericho left in the back after destroying more shit backstage, and it looks like Jericho is off for some time.
Right. Yeah, I'd wondered if they would actually execute the turn, you know, or at least have one of the two members leave the group. And it seems like we're just delaying things right now. Don't know if like the tone of this one hit as intended. I feel like Jericho was going for like a very serious performance, and in the end it kind of felt more comical to me. Like him just kind of running around backstage, smashing like random like trays and stuff, like didn't really come across as like, I don't know, intimidating or what.
My bigger thing was just for such a big promo for Big Bill, it was just so clearly the, I have remembered what I am going to say in every order that my words are coming out. It was just, there was no emotion behind this serious promo. And it just reeked of like, this guy's memorized.
Noted that myself. I thought it was so stiff, but I also like, it almost made me wonder if he was purposely trying to act badly. And in pro wrestling, it's kind of hard to, well, they could be doing all of this to swerve us, right? to trick somebody, perhaps. I don't think that's the case. I think in wrestling, you often just get bad acting. He's cut good promos in the past, but
he has. For such a big promo that he had here, it just felt so mechanical and like stunningly so.
I'm almost disappointed we're not going to get like an actual decision, and that we kind of have to see this through to some later conclusion. You know,
I mean, if it wasn't for the Hurt Syndicate, I would suggest like while Jericho is away, these two should win the tag belt. But you're just coming off this match, and
they're
don't see
hot enough to beat the Hurt Syndicate.
They're not.
Not at all.
But I could absolutely see Big Bill winning some title while Jericho's gone, and that's Jericho's program when he comes back. Is you finally get to these two at some point. Like, I don't know how much more you can go with this as the group. Like, it does feel like...
Who would you have Big Bill beat? Like, who is...
One of the 15 champions.
So, it's not going to be Okada. It's not going to be Kenny. I don't even... It shouldn't be Cole. Cole just won the thing.
Maybe it's Bandido. Maybe he beats Bandido.
I mean, then we're just back to, like you know, square one here. Like, what, Jericho going for the... his 10th ROH championship, you know, like, isn't Bandido the project here? I don't think Big Bill has.
Well, then
come across...
at the very least, these guys should go on a win streak. Like they are succeeding without Jericho. That should be the idea.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
We don't need a belt thrown in there. Okay. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. For Collision on Saturday, we have Anthony Bowens, the 5-tool player, against Blake Christian, Brody King against Takeshita in the Owen Hart Cup, Jamie Hayter against Billy Starks in the Owen Hart Cup, and Athena against Harley Cameron, with the winner facing Mercedes next week. So we could get Mercedes and Athena on 4 days' notice, next week.
Yeah, yeah. The breakthrough show.
Yes, the spring breakthrough show.
Yeah.
Also, FTR will speak on the show.
Hmm.
Yes. So I look forward to a Dax soliloquy. And then we had Alicia Atoot in the back with the Hurt Syndicate. And Lashley explains how he doesn't like MJF. We don't need him, Shelton notes. But little George Costanza is kind of funny. And man, Lashley pops again for Shelton Benjamin. I mean, Lashley thought this was like the funniest joke.
I don't see George Costanza at all in MJF. MJF? Do you?
No. They're from New York.
Yeah, he's more of a...
Maybe if he didn't get those hair transplants, maybe he was going in the
I was
going to
say his hair is more Kramer than anyone.
Well, then we had MJF enter, and he looks at Alicia and says, "To get your skank ass out of here." And there goes Alicia. And
no asked, way to treat a significant other.
Yes. He says to MVP that he's being treated like he's just some punk ass bitch. MVP says, "You know, they know exactly who you are, MJF. Your reputation precedes you. And in business, you find out what the consumer wants and you give it to them."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically like telling him to find ways to convince the others by giving them what they desire. So each week will be his attempt to win over a member of the Hurt Syndicate. So what does Shelton truly want? What does Bobby Lashley truly want? These are the questions that MJF needs to be asking.
It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is two editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. And then the main event was Claudio and Wheeler Yuta against Samoa Joe and Hook. So Hook is in. He hits some rolling Germans to Yuta, and then Claudio catches Hook with a stomp on the chest, and they beat down on Hook forever. They were in control throughout the whole break. Hook finally hits a suplex, but they knock Joe off the apron. So Hook, when he manages to get there after several suplexes, Joe is not there. Joe fights Claudio on the ground, and They hit this powerbomb combo. Hook barely kicks out of this. And Joe hits a uranage on the floor to Claudio. Moxley is out, distracting Bryce. So Yuta now gouges the eyes of Hook, just like Moxley did in the opener. When Shibata runs down, applying a choke to Moxley. And meanwhile, there's a red rum applied to Yuta, and Claudio is caught in the coquina clutch on the floor. So with three submissions applied, Hook taps out, or well, at least submits Yuta and gets the win for his team. You would have to imagine that Pac was probably figured into this whole post-match because afterwards, I thought personally for the match, there was nothing wrong with the match, but there was certainly nothing great about it either. It just, to me, felt like a pretty unsatisfying main event for the show. It was more so, this was on last to do the angle at the end and the title challenge.
The way they structured it, I almost wondered if something got cut out because it was just Hook taking
Joe never got the big hot tag.
It was like Hook like getting beaten down all throughout commercial break, and we come back and Hook ends up winning. So in that sense, it actually felt like a bit of a novel way to book a match because you're expecting the hot tag from Joe and instead Hook just kind of wins the match for himself. But I also do wonder if that was just due to a limitation of time. But it didn't jump out at me in much any sort of way. But I did think it was strong booking for the ops who, you know, are one of the few to get one over on the Death Riders, especially with the way this segment ended.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the post-match here. So Marina comes in and she nails Joe in the knee with the chair. Yuta and Claudio, meanwhile, attack Hook while Shibata comes in. He gets knocked out and they set up an unfolded chair with the two legs facing upward. And Claudio delivers the neutralizer to Hook. So this man may have just been impaled on live television. Taz is just son of a bitch. It's like Taz has such a... the man's a pro. It's like, you know what? He's his own man. He might be murdered, but he's his own man. So Joe chases them away, and he is seething. And Joe gets on the mic and calls them cowardly sons of bitches. You call yourselves Death Riders? You're more like Dick Riders. And man, this crowd thought that this was the most clever put down ever created. Dick Riders. And then, by the end of this segment, Hook is on his feet with Samoa Joe, who on Hook's behalf is issuing a challenge for the trios titles. I was like, this is just such a waste of an injury angle. Like, the guy was on his feet. We're going for the belts. And we also have, like, the glaring issue now that, like, is Pac even going to be okay for this? Which, I guess, worst case scenario, you could have Moxley sub in. You could always go that route. But, yeah, they... You know, this was booked fine to set up your challengers for the trios belts, but I mean, just given like the extent of like this neutralizer on this chair, I would have saved it for something a little more meaningful to like take Hook out of action. And instead, he was like standing tall with Joe by the end of this. It was like he was down for 2 minutes.
Yeah. I can understand the motivation of like every one of the things that they did, like, but I also understand what you just said, John, because it's almost like the spot was too good to just do. At the same time, like a normal neutralizer obviously wouldn't have been enough, you know.
Neutralizer on a normal chair, just a folded chair.
Okay,
that's so bad, but that's not going to impale the guy.
The difference for you between whether or not this segment was whether worthy of criticism or not is whether or not the chair was unfolded.
I just didn't know why we couldn't have just done a basic like laid out spot. It's like
what's a basic laid out spot to you?
I think they could have just done the neutralizer if the guy was going to be standing and laying out a challenge by the end. Why
to be memorable? It's not enough to like, you know, gain.
This was not supposed to be memorable. Like we're supposed to forget about this by the end.
No, you needed something for Joe to be that pissed off about to heat up the feud. So
they laid them all out at the end. Gets up, cuts his promo.
Yeah, but he did that to his friend, okay? He went beyond a regular laying out. He unfolded the chair before the neutralizer.
Obviously didn't go beyond enough.
But I also understand why they needed to book the ops with their hands held high, because you need to be establishing them. You need to, you know, the point of the segment is to make them look good, like they're capable opponents for the Death Riders. So everybody tried to, like, they tried to make everybody look good, basically, and maybe by the end that you know wasn't as perfect as it could have been. But I personally, it worked for me. I thought by the end of the segment, they established the Ops as worthy challengers for the Death Riders.
Yeah, I assume Moxley would have been part of this anyway, and it just would have been a 4-on-3 deal.
Yeah, I definitely noticed like having Shibata choke Moxley out like that, and I understand Moxley did the same to him earlier in the night, but still, like, I wouldn't expect like your champion to, and somebody as protected as Moxley to just like be in that visual. So I wondered if like Pac was might have been in that spot instead. Don't know.
I just think it tied into the opening match that it made more sense for Moxley to be the one choked out. But I mean, regardless, you would have assumed Pac would have been part of this. And I guess that's the question coming out of tonight is the extent of Pac's injury and if he'll be ready to go for whenever they want to do this trios title match. And if they just have to mix things up and Moxley has to do the trios match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That was Dynamite following Dynasty. How did they do for a follow-up show? There was a lot thrown on to this episode in terms of their post-Dynasty storylines.
I thought it was a fine show. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised, but I really liked the $400,000 eight-man tag. Like, just as a match, that nucleus of guys that they have both on the heel and the babyface side feels so fresh right now. I'm continuing to enjoy what they're doing with Paige. We didn't get to see a ton of it on the show, but what little I did see, I'm really enjoying. Swerve continues to come across really well. Not as high up on the Bucks, but I understand why they need to be involved in order to really kind of like build to a potential Paige and Swerve team up, for instance. So I thought it was a fine addition of Dynamite. How about
yeah.
you?
Yeah. I had some of my issues with like the some of the angles on the show, but the eight man was exceptionally strong. I thought that was the high point of the show, in ring or promo wise. Very strong
yeah,
stuff.
I'm sure Swerve and Pac would have been awesome if not for the injury. So I'm sure we'll get an update. So.
Yeah, it does make you wonder what got extended as a result of that and, right. and how they dealt with that. They went 4 minutes. You would have assumed that match would have gone significantly longer.
And this show still ended at what, like 10:07?
Oh yeah, they did like the 8 minute overrun. Like yeah. they still went the regular time. All right, well there you go, everyone. Those are our thoughts on Dynamite. We're gonna say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube channel. I will be back on Friday night here after SmackDown with the great Neil Flanagan. But Wei is gonna stick around a little longer for all of the Post Wrestling Cafe members. Go excel at postwrestlingcafe.com because now we're getting into your feedback and we're gonna be chatting about Dark Side of the Ring. On Big Van Vader.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.